Hey, Anna, I've been thinking a lot about Star Trek lately, and especially, you know, this came out in the 60s, the original one, and this was like before the moon landing. Isn't it kind of weird that, you know, they're traveling through space, supposedly, in quotes, traveling through space.
You know, it's not real.
Well, that's a good point.
Did I have to say that?
Well, it seems so realistic and glamorous, flying around space in those bucket seats.
Being
and,
beamed up.
Well, the beam.
I do like a bucket seat.
Don't you like a good bucket seat?
I do.
Especially
I need
swiveling.
To be yeah.
Swiveling bucket seat.
With like arms, it looks very like lush.
Yeah, but I mean, think about that. That came out before Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin landed on the moon. Isn't that kind of cool to think of that they were traveling through space while we were just like dreaming about it?
Yeah, they were ahead of the game.
Yeah, just by a little bit. But I think that, you know, then when you compare like the Apollo missions to a Star Trek set.
Which I do all the time.
Yeah. I think I'd rather have the Star Trek set. I mean, it's a lot more comfortable.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a lot better.
I mean, those three guys in the Apollo, they're like jam-packed like sardines in that thing.
Yeah.
And they go up and... I just think there's different ways to travel. I think we should explore
I
that.
I go for comfort. Clearly
Wouldn't
so
you
do
go
you.
For comfort?
Yeah. You know, they should have taken some notes.
Oh, yeah.
NASA should have taken some notes.
Why didn't they look at Gene Roddenberry and say, you know, how did you do that?
Let's do this.
From the studios of Cincinnati Public Radio, I'm Dean Regas, and this is Looking Up.
We're both from the Cincinnati Observatory. Dean's the astronomer, and I'm asking the questions. In this episode, actor, director, author, and pop culture icon William Shatner joins us. So we're going to talk to William Shatner.
Woo, it's exciting.
Crazy. Are you excited?
I'm pretty excited.
Are you nervous?
I'm very nervous,
just like
actually.
Rapid fire feelings at you.
I know.
And get your thoughts.
How are you feeling? Lukewarm?
I feel fine.
Yeah.
Probably... No, I feel fine. I'm excited.
You were going to say something bad about Star Trek.
No,
I could tell.
I would never.
You were like,
I would never.
It was going through your mind.
And you then... know, when you're a little girl, you don't want to watch Star Trek movies. You want to watch, like, you know, My Little Pony or whatever. And then you got an older brother making you watch Star Trek. It's a drag.
Yeah.
And it was scary.
Oh, it was scary.
Although I did like Uhura a lot. She was glamorous.
Yep. Yep.
I really liked her.
Yeah, I heard...
get her on the show.
I heard
Shatner, I'm excited.
No, but I heard one of the questions somebody asked William Shatner in the past was like, you know, wasn't Uhura too hot for you? And he said, no, nobody's too hot for me. That's not possible. And then he like said, yeah, she was.
Yeah, wait a minute, when I think about it,
yeah,
that's hilarious.
Even he couldn't.
Right. He's like,
even he couldn't.
Fine.
Think that. Fine, I agree.
No, it's exciting. I mean, are you... I mean, you're not gonna freak out on me, right? You're gonna stay with it when he gets on this interview.
I'm pretty calm, because it's, you know, there's the whole Star Trek, Star Wars conflict. Which one's better? Which one's? I don't. Wouldn't it be
don't
funny
do
if
it.
We said? So I really like that part when you were in like Jedi training.
That's right.
Should I say?
Yeah, I mean, like, I think it's great that the rebels were able to and then just like hear the click of a receiver or like a phone, you know,
right.
turning off.
What's Jar Jar Binks like?
That's right.
What I should ask. Yeah.
Is Chewbacca that tall in real life?
Okay, I guess
this is good. You know, now you put it in our head.
No.
Focus. Oh my God, I'm nervous now. Now I am nervous.
Now you're nervous.
Oh my God, I'm
perfect.
Sweating.
Just what we want.
Just what we want.
There's probably no other actor more identified with one role or who has had such an impact on pop culture than William Shatner. His career, while long and varied, will always be grounded in his portrayal of Captain James T. Kirk on the series and subsequent movies in the Star Trek franchise. He was just on tour with Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. We were able to talk to him a few days before that. And he has a new book out, Live Long and What I Learned Along the Way. It's our sincere pleasure to welcome William Shatner to Looking Up. Well, you've had such a long and diverse career. You're actor, author, recording artist, director. Do you remember like your first acting role or the moment that hit you like, yes, entertainment, this is my calling in life?
Well, I don't know whether it was as profound as that. I was in the story I tell is I was in a camp play when I was 6 years old. And
six?
Wow.
I made the audience cry and I thought, Wow, that's interesting, and went on from there.
Was it a comedy, or was it supposed to be? Was it supposed to be?
Exactly. At 6 years, you don't know whether it is a comedy.
But the lights hit you.
And in any case, I influenced an audience, and it sounded good to me, and I sort of continued after that. And I was in Canada, and just continued acting. I did it as on radio as a teenager, and university. I did it, I was active. Never did anything else after that.
Oh, well, you talk about influencing an audience. Did you ever think that, especially in your role on Star Trek, that you would influence so many people in their career choices to be astronomers or adventurers?
Yeah. Are you guys, are you qualified by education or just interest? Looking at the stars.
Well, so I've been an astronomer at the observatory for 18 years, but I'm pretty much self-taught. So it's folks like you that kind of got my interest piqued.
Well, I've been fascinated by the whole mystery of space for the longest time. So it didn't take Star Trek to do that. But the awe and wonder of space is always there, and all anybody on Earth has to do is look up into the stars and wonder what's out there is to be part of the magic.
And so have you been to astronomy fests or star parties?
Yeah, so
looking through telescopes, all that
over the years? Absolutely. Us amateurs looking at the rings of Saturn and all, it's fascinating. But the astronomers like yourself looking through the big telescopes and seeing the way the stars are born and die and more closely, that's got to be awesome.
So if you ever had the opportunity, if NASA came to you and was like, we need you to go into space, they had John Glenn go on a second trip, would you go? Or was there a time in your life when you would have wanted to do that?
If they asked me to go, I'd say, why?
And especially,
why me?
Especially if they said, we need you to go.
That's right.
We need you because you're on a television show. Over the years, as I've gotten older, I got more claustrophobic, and I can't imagine, even if you're just going to Mars, even just to Mars.
That's right.
And encased in that capsule for a year and a half, floating around. It's bad enough. I tour a lot. I'm on tour, for example, and we're playing the Wrath of Khan, and I come on stage afterwards and explore people's minds and my minds and the Wrath of Khan. We have a good time. And it's a mystery. The whole thing is a mystery. And touring with this Wrath of Khan as I am on some weekends, finding a bed that's soft enough and too soft and then you want a firm bed, and now you've got me floating in space for a year and a half. What'll that do to my back?
Right.
I don't think I'll go.
Ultimate comfort. Everywhere's a bed up there on the space station. Everywhere you just Velcro yourself.
Yeah, but if you want a firm mattress, you can't. Going in space isn't quite the answer.
Yeah, I agree. Go for comfort. Yeah,
definitely.
Right. Get the mattress number,
the sleep number.
Mine's 100.
Just a plank.
Slab of concrete.
Right, exactly.
Well, you mentioned that you were touring with the Wrath of Khan. Can you tell us a little bit why that film specifically is the one for this, the tour that you've been on?
Well, there was a Star Trek. The people at Paramount thought that making a big movie of Star Trek might give them a shot at some of the box office that Star Wars was doing. Mm-hmm. So they made a big movie with a big director and spent a lot of money, and it wasn't that successful. And they were going to cancel it, and they decided to make a cheaper movie and harken back to what the series had, the good stories and stuff like that, and that was The Wrath of Khan. And it was successful. It made more money than they spent making it. And as a result, the people feel that the movie The Wrath of Khan spawned all these other iterations of Star Trek.
Oh.
So 53 years later, there are all these Star Trek things going on as a result of The Wrath of Khan. So The Wrath of Khan may be the most successful of the Star Trek films before J.J. Abrams got onto it. So it's of interest to anybody, but especially to people interested in Star Trek. And then the other part of that is I'll come out after the film's over and talk to the people and have fun with them, and we all have a great time.
Will they ask you to yell Khan at the top of your voice? Will they do that?
They do, and I back off somewhat.
Anna and I thought it would be a much different movie if you said, "Oh, Khan, I'm very disappointed at you."
Right. Exactly.
I'm not mad. I'm disappointed.
I'm disappointed.
Right,
that's right.
Right.
That would have been very different. I think your choice.
I understand your impulses, Khan. But,
That sounds like Leonard Nimoy right there. I think.
Right. Exactly. So I'll be there, and I hope you'll come along. It's really an entertaining evening.
Oh,
and,
we'd love to.
Sounds very cool.
Worthwhile coming to. The film itself is wonderful. And then I'll come out and connect with the audience, and we'll all have a good time.
That sounds wonderful. It sounds wonderful. And as if you didn't have more free time, you have a new book out that's called Live Long And...
.. And it's that .. that is the pivotal moment. Live Long And, the book is out there now, getting great reviews and selling, actually. And it's say yes to life and you're encumbered by the fact that you really can't give advice to anybody because you don't know what that person is like and how they receive information. All you can do is say, this is what happened to me. This is what I did about it. Maybe it'll resonate with you. And if it does, maybe it'll help you. So the book is Say Yes to Life. And then there's an album, a country music album. Why Not Me, it's called, and it's gotten great reviews and is out there. So
country music too, huh?
Music and Christmas album coming out in October.
Oh my gosh.
Shatner Claus.
Yes, I saw that was the title.
So there's all kinds of things that I'm doing, including this tour.
Do you have any downtime at all? You're so busy.
Well, I'm talking to you, and I figure that's a downtime.
That's pretty much
just relaxing.
That sounds
hanging
about
out.
Right. Just hanging out with us, just friends.
Right.
And I assume if there is an audio version of your book, it will be your voice we will hear.
Actually, there is.
Excellent.
There is an audio version that I did.
Excellent. Excellent.
That's awesome.
One final question. You know, when Star Trek was on TV, you were right in the middle of the Apollo era, and
yes.
I mean, you went to space before Neil Armstrong. I guess you went in another, but anyway, he didn't go to the moon until after the series was over.
That's correct. I watched him from a pasture in Long Island. I was doing a summer tour of a play. And looking up into the sky that evening from a lonely place in Long Island.
Wow.
I mean, I kind of put the two of you in kind of similar situations. I mean, here is that you are the adventurer that kind of inspired a lot of folks to go this way. And then when Neil made that first step and Buzz Aldrin and all the others, it was kind of like, science fiction coming true.
Well, I had been to the Cape, I don't know, maybe a year before or so, and they made a big deal of it. And they allowed me to go into the lunar excursion module.
Ooh.
And I lay down on that hammock that they had, because they didn't know the G's that they would face when they landed on the moon. So I was like, I was there for a brief second.
Wow. Well, we should sign you up. We'll make a comfy bed. We'll get
The hammock's not going to cut it.
Well, big, Starship Enterprise size thing.
There you go.
That you can walk around artificial gravity. Sounds like you're ready to go to space.
Before we leave, I've got to hold it. You've got to explain to me in as succinctly a way as possible. Space-time. Explain to me space-time.
Space-time. Well, boy, how long do we have? Let's see.
No,
not very long.
30 seconds.
It has to be done so that I and your audience understand the concept of space-time.
Yes. So space is, time is relative when you're space, and the mass around things can warp time. So the more massive an object is, the more warped time is. And so wherever you're traveling in space and the speed you're traveling in space and what you're traveling around is all relative. So what you experience is totally different than somebody else. So you guys on the Enterprise going warp 8, I have no idea what that means, by the way. But when you guys are going warp 8,
nor does anybody.
That's right. If only we had those dilithium crystals somewhere.
Oh, my God.
So here's what's happened. Here's what's happened, Dean. What you've explained is totally confusing.
Good. I hope so.
This happens all the time.
So we have to leave it at that. But I swear somebody's going to explain it. Of course. If we see a photon of light 13.8 billion years away, it's 13.8 billion years away. That's time, man.
Yeah.
That hasn't altered. Now, I know the photon curves around mass because the gravity changes it. So I understand that. But why? What's being different about it? And we have to go. So I'm going to leave you with that mystery and your audience. And Saturday night at the Taft Theater, we'll try again.
Yeah, can you? If you invite me backstage, I'll give you the 45-second
explanation. You're invited backstage, for God's sake!
Awesome! We'll set it up.
Oh my gosh!
All right, you got it.
Well, William Shatner, thanks so much for talking today.
You.
It's been a lot of fun.
Take care. Bye bye.
Bye bye. We've been talking with actor and author William Shatner. Thanks so much for taking the time to be with us.
So. Unbelievably, this whole invitation to come and explain space-time and hang out with William Shatner came to fruition, right, Dean?
I cannot believe it. So from the podcast, from our interview.
You were so cool before we were going to, now you're like, I can't believe it.
I know. I met him in person. Yeah, I mean, so we interviewed him earlier and then, and he extended that invite to come backstage and hang out and all this stuff and be best friends.
You guys text now?
Yeah, we got tattoos, we got everything. So it's like.
You're on a text chain with him and George Takei.
Yeah, that's right. I'm like Kirk Life. That's what I got. And he's like, keep looking up with me.
Oh my gosh.
That'd be good.
What if he adopted your catchphrase?
Oh.
Did that happen?
Well, Neil deGrasse Tyson kind of took mine.
Well,
but, you know.
Let's stay focused.
Yeah,
okay,
right. Back to so.
So you had to meet him backstage.
Yeah, yeah. So
whoa.
It kind of happened like this, is that we got to go backstage to meet him before the show. And he's just sitting there on the couch talking to some people. And he's like, oh, Dean, come on. And we got this whole figured out how we're going to do this. And I was like, okay. Because he really wanted an answer to what is space time.
Right.
And
he was
so
persistent.
I know he was. He was thinking about it. It kept him up at night and everything.
That's right.
And so he's like, okay, so this is how we're going to do it. You're going to go back in the audience and I'll do some Q&A. And then in the middle, I'll start getting all worked up about space time. And then I'll say, if only there's somebody in the audience who can explain it to me easily and simply. And then that's when you stand up and I'll bring you up on stage. And then you can explain it to me.
So he wanted you to do like a skit.
Oh, yeah. So this is, I was planted in the audience.
Where on your resume are you going to put acted with William Shatner?
Oh, that's a good idea.
Good question.
Wikipedia page.
That's right.
We'll talk about that later.
That's another thing. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So I guess I consider we rehearsed. Backstage.
Did you really?
Not really. He just said, when I say this, stand up and then come up.
Okay, well, that's good.
Okay.
He gave you a cue.
Yeah,
as
that
they
was
call
my
it.
Cue. Yeah.
Okay.
So then I walked up on stage and then He said, "So who are you that you can, he's like, "Who are you that thinks it can explain this to me?" And I said, "I'm Dean Reeves from the Cincinnati Observatory." Mm-hmm. And, and then he said, "So you got to explain to me what this time space is." And I was like, "Space time?" He's like, "Whatever. Time space, space time, whatever you want to call it."
He's like, "This isn't rehearsed. I don't know." Yeah. And you're like,
Yeah, I should have rehearsed more.
You're like, "We needed a couple more minutes."
That's right.
Yeah, oh, my gosh.
So I did my best to explain it to him, and it didn't go according to plan exactly. I tried to
Show must go on or whatever.
Well, I think it was is that he was so like worked up about it. He was like, so like, what is this thing? And nobody could explain it to me. And so every time I kind of started, he kind of was like, "Well, no, that's not right." And I was trying to explain it with Star Trek references. And he's like, "Dean, it's just a TV show. Come on." And I was like, "Well, I'm trying to make it relatable. I'm trying to make it relatable to you."
Oh my gosh.
And then, so after a few minutes of that, then he said, "Well, so this reminds me of a story from Stephen Hawking that he told me about some stuff." And then he gave a Stephen Hawking story. And,
oh my gosh.
And then afterwards he's like, "Well, thanks for trying to explain it to me." And so that was about it.
It's like, well, it can't be done.
That's right. It's not possible to be done. And I did say, I was like, "So, did Neil deGrasse Tyson explain it to you once?" And he's like, "He tried too." And I was like, "Oh, he didn't do any better than I did?" He said, "No." And I thought, well, I think we're all in trouble.
I don't know
if anybody can explain it to him. But, I talked to Stephen Hawking, Neil deGrasse Tyson.
You're right there
those. What could I possibly?
You're like your contemporaries. Those two.
I don't know what I could have possibly added to that conversation. So,
My gosh.
So I did kind of come up with I did have prepared remarks. So I did have my notes.
They have them written on your hand? Like,
I should. Well, I was a little nervous, I'll be honest, like standing up there on stage with them and I think I did kind of let on a little bit. Like this was probably a bad move,
God.
But I did say like, I'm kind of nervous up here. And he's like, "Why are you nervous?" I was like, "Well, I've heard things about you."
Did you say that really?
I said something along those lines. And that could have possibly soured the whole bit.
And he's like, get off my stage. You're no Spock.
I know.
That's the insult.
And there was one moment. Oh, yeah. That's off limits.
Yeah, that's right. Fair enough. Sorry.
George Takei. Those are off limits.
That's right. Don't even make jokes.
That's right. But yeah, for one moment, he started talking and I was like, almost like wanted to stand behind him. Like, it's like, "The stage is yours, Captain. You can have the bridge is yours." And so
you just like slowly retreat behind the curtain.
I could have totally done that. Like, and everybody in the audience would have been like, "Who was that?" Yeah. Oh, well, back to Captain Kirk. It could have exactly happened like that.
Oh my God. Like you're an apparition. You just appeared and then you were gone.
That's right. That's right.
Cameo.
And nobody would have ever remembered. But I stayed strong. I planted my feet, and I was like, "I'm not getting off the stage until I do my best to explain space time."
And did you do that?
No, it didn't.
Now I left quickly.
It didn't work.
All right. Well, do you want it now? Okay. Now I feel bad. We're gonna have to don't nerd out too long on this because we're gonna lose listeners. They're gonna skip on to something else.
So all my prepared remarks here, I was trying to make it Star Trek relatable. And also, so the whole idea of what space-time is that you not only take a place in space, but you know what time it is on that place, because time is relative wherever you go. So, for example, let's say I'm going to go see William Shatner at the Taft Theater. What would you ask after that?
Did you embarrass yourself?
No.
I would say...
If you wanted to go to the show and I said, William Shatner is speaking at the Taft Theater, you'd say...
What day is it?
There you go. So that's the time. You need to know the time.
All right.
And then if I say, I'm going to go see William Shatner on September 22nd, you're going to say...
What time? Where?
Where is it? Because you need to know those things.
Can I get some cue cards?
Okay. Well, that's why it didn't work with William Shatner.
He goes off the cuff.
Yeah. So you need to know where something's happened and when. Those two are
where
things.
Where and when. Yeah,
so you just got to tie those things together.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what, this is where I tried to tie in Star Trek. I was like, so when you travel space and you need to know where you're going and what time it is by the time you get there. And that's when he said, Dean, it's only a TV show.
I really wanted to yell that, but I didn't.
I know.
I'm
but anyway,
let you finish.
But this is for in real life that you have to know these things to go to a place, to get to that place at that time And when you're traveling really fast with dilithium crystals and whatever mumbo jumbo the Enterprise traveled on,
you need
to actually figure that out. And so the other thing with Star Trek is that I tried to get him to agree that he was using space-time in the because whenever he said, you know, whenever he's doing his report, he would say star date 22.40.
Yeah, in that journal he kept?
Yeah. So you know what star date is?
No, I don't. Am I supposed to know?
Nobody knows. Okay. It's all made up. It was ridiculous.
A real question?
But he wasn't saying like March 13th, 1965. He said star date.
And he would say a bunch of numbers after it, right?
It was all gibberish.
Nonsensical numbers.
Yeah.
Okay.
But what I think it was space time.
Oh,
that's he was given the space time. He was telling Starfleet like, okay, this is where I am and this is when I am.
Right. But it wasn't anything intentional.
No, it was all made up.
I mean, it's a good idea, though.
So then I also thought, well, how time is relative, that when, you know, that all of his Star Trek episodes are going out into space, all of William Shatner's movies are going out in space because they're all beaming out there in space at the speed of light. That's what TV broadcasts do.
Okay.
And so there's all this relative time that's going on. So if you're an alien creature living on different worlds, you can watch William Shatner movies and TV shows live. But in the future, but in the past. So, for instance, if you lived on a star that's like 40 light years away, they're just watching Star Trek now. And they're like, oh, man, I love William Shatner now.
Uh-huh.
Whereas we loved William Shatner 40 years ago.
We don't love him now? This is awkward.
No, we love him now, too. But they just discovered him.
It started and it's continued.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, like, another planet could be watching T.J. Hooker reruns right now. And they're like, oh, we love T.J. Hooker. And then they could also watch Miss Congeniality and be like, oh, we love Miss
Congeniality. Oh, my God, he was in that movie.
Yeah.
I love that movie.
And so they're all watching him live now, whereas we watched him live years ago.
They're just discovering him now.
Exactly. So that's what space-time is William Shatner everywhere.
I think that he'd probably like that. I would like it.
If only I got to say on stage.
He was like, we're done here, Dean. Thanks, buddy.
So, Captain, that's for you. You're all around the universe right now. Aliens are loving it.
That's it for this episode of Looking Up. Thanks so much to William Shatner for joining us. You can find a link to his latest book on our website, WVXU.org/lookingup.
We'd like to hear from you. On social media, you can find us on Facebook. Just search Looking Up WVXU. And on Twitter, we're at Looking Up Podcast. You can also drop us an email at lookingup@wvxu.org.
We'd love to know what got you interested in space, whether you'd like to make the trip to Mars, even who your favorite astronomer is. Don't say Dean. Just kidding.
Don't say me.
Or any questions you'd like us to explore. Send us an email or post on Facebook or Twitter.
Remember to subscribe to Looking Up wherever you listen to podcasts and give us a rating and comment on Apple Podcasts. If you're new to Looking Up, you can always find all of our past episodes at wvxu.org/lookingup.
Our theme song and additional music is by Y, that's W-H-Y question mark, from their album Moline, courtesy of Joyful Noise Recordings and Terror Bird Media.
Looking Up is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio. Kevin Reynolds is our producer, Josh Elstro is our engineer, and Jim Nolan provides additional technical assistance.
Thanks so much for listening. I'm Anna Heeman.
And I'm Dean Regas. Keep looking up.